Hello, this is Phyllis Murimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Well, I'm now out at Kenyon Ranch, and this is a workshop facility just south of Tucson and just south of where I live by a few miles. It's a beautiful place, and this week, for some lucky souls, they're going to be participating in, I don't know, workshop is not quite the right word, but teaching, I would say, by Phil Morgan and Jenny Ray. And the lucky thing is I get to interview both of them. Phil Morgan, as you know, has been on the show a couple of times before this. And today we're going to start on a new topic, and that is gratitude. We've talked some about compassion and some about love and all the different kinds of love. And it seems like that the interviews have really centered on parental relationships, and especially the mother-daughter relationship. And so I thought I would grab a guy while I was had the chance. And so that's also why I wanted to interview Phil. Have a little equality of airtime.
A little male energy.
Male energy, yeah. Yes. but the most important aspect for me of Phil's work as a Reiki master and also as a shaman, and Jenny Ray's work, she's a medicine woman, is that their practice, their Native American practice of shamanism, really is centered on gratitude. And there's a wonderful thing about gratitude that I've gotten from my Native American teachings. And that is that, you know, it was my impression anyway from my teachers that we human beings are a part of the whole plan of the universe, of nature. And so we're not really superior in the sense of, you know, that we get to lord it over or control nature, as we have been led to believe sometimes by our 21st century attitudes. But also that what is important is to have the circle of giving and receiving. And what powers that circle is gratitude. So it's the receiving. It's a being able to say thank you, but from a really different place inside of our body than thanks. And I've been really touched by this because in the last 2 years, as you know, I've been on the receiving end of a lot of wonderful gifts. Reiki, financial support, you know, visits by people who spent their own money to come and see me and give me Reiki and support me in different ways, in their own unique ways of healing and being with. So I know that gratitude is one of the things that I've been learning about very deeply, and I offer this time for the next 2 weeks with Phil and Jenny Ray to you and our in our quest in some way for understanding the workings of the wheel and how we can step into gratitude and allow the wheel to keep moving and to accept what comes to us always as gift. Mm-hmm. So I hope that's what you'll hear from them, but if not, that'll be a good a good discussion in and of itself. So, Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Phil. It's great to be back with you again.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And so, can you just tell me and the listeners a little bit about how you entered Reiki, and then I understand that shamanism came right at the same time. Is that true?
It did.
Which I didn't actually know until just a few months ago.
Yeah.
So...
It was, I think, February 1983, my wife went to work one day, and a friend of hers, Florence O'Neill,
oh, yeah,
had been down to Eugene and taken a Reiki class, and they worked together at the Head Start program in Salem, Oregon, and they were on a bus ride, and Florence gave Marty a little bit of a treatment, and Marty liked what happened, and so they decided that they should have a class in Salem and invite the teacher, Barb West, from Eugene up to teach the class. And they were talking about where to do this and decided that our house would be an excellent place to have the class, which meant that my job was to take our three daughters and the dog and disappear for Saturday and Sunday. Which was okay for me because I was in the computer field at the time, and it, you know, it was interesting what they were talking about, but it really didn't grab me. And I made the commitment to take the girls and the dog and made arrangements to go over to the coast and spend the weekend there. And but on Friday night, Barbara was doing this introduction, and they did it down at the Head Start program because the class was full of Head Start employees. So I went down there to find out what was going to be going on at my house, you know, check it out a little bit, make sure this wasn't too weird. And Barbara started her lecture by saying, if you like your life exactly like it is right now, you should leave because Reiki can change your life. And I thought, that's a really good line. I was in marketing at the time, and I was, you know, trying to promote our computer services, and we needed some little boost to get the users excited about what. So, telling them that we had exactly what they wanted and it would change their business and improve everything sounded like a really good opener. Well, by the time Barbara got finished with the workshop, I felt things changing inside of me, and I wanted to dump the kids and the dog and stay for the weekend, but that wasn't an option, so I had to wait another month. So in April of 1983, I took first degree and started working with that, and I had people coming to me for Reiki treatments, and so on the weekdays I'd be commuting back and forth from Salem to Portland to do the computer work, and on the weekends I'd be doing Reiki treatments. And one day on the way back from Portland, this voice came on in the car, like that somebody turned on the radio and said, you need to take second degree. And I thought, no, I'm perfectly fine with what I'm doing. And people are enjoying the treatments. And the voice said again, you need to take second degree. And my response again was, no, I don't. And the third time it said it, I was like, okay, why? And they said, you can't, you know, continue your path with Reiki and go on to be a master until you've done this. And that kind of had me ready to pull over the car and park it and leave it as haunted.
A haunted car.
A haunted car. So I...
Okay. So we're a little bit rudely interrupted by a fan, but we're back again, and Phil's just going to see his Reiki master.
And so we make arrangements to do the second degree in October of 83, and I feel a huge shift happening. By the end of November, I just don't know what's happening in my life. I go to my boss and I say I need some time off, so we agree that I'll take January, February, and March of 1984 off, and a three-month leave of absence. The company had been going through a lot of ownership changes, and it was in chaos anyway, so it was fine for me to get out of there for a while. And I ended up at Brighton Bush Hot Springs and the Oregon Cascade Mountains, and had a little cabin there, and really went deep inside. I did a lot of tree hugging and laying on the ground and talking to the spirits, and figuring out what I was going to do when I grew up. And I'd taken several books with me, and a couple of them were on shamanic practice. And while I was up there, Brant Segunda, who is founded the Dance of the Deer Foundation, he's a Huizhou Indian trained shaman, came and did a workshop, and I had nothing else to do, so I went and took his workshop. And I got really fascinated with shamanism and the belief systems and the practices. I didn't particularly want to go down into the mountains of north central Mexico and chew peyote buttons and do that form of shamanism, but it got me started on the path. And so Reiki really did come just before my shamanic practice, and after I got back down from Brighton Bush, and I quit the job with a computer firm, started doing Reiki full-time, started reading a lot of books about shamanism because I was struggling to find my path. I had some friends who were Native American. I knew that I could approach them and I could learn their traditions, but that didn't feel quite right for me. I was white. My parents were both Welsh. I felt more connected with the Celtic shamanic traditions, the Druids and things. And so I was looking for a pathway into the shamanic practice, and I found Michael Harner's work on the Way of the Shaman and the Foundation for Shamanic Studies that he started, which is cross-cultural shamanism. So it's in the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, it's the essence of the shamanic practice that's taught, and then you figure out how to do that in your own life. So rather than learning somebody else's traditions, I had to come up with my own. Which,
wow, what a great concept.
Which was a really interesting contrast for me between Reiki, because I'm part of Usuishiki Ryoho, this tradition of Reiki that goes back, 100 years or more, probably a lot more. And I've got this other practice, my other spiritual practice is shamanism, in which I'm trying to figure out what to do, because there's no framework for me other than working with the spirit world and finding out my guidance from them. So it was very, very interesting to have both of those and hold them both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it also gave me, I found that Reiki was my practice of doing, or of being, of just being with somebody, of having my hands on them, letting the energy come through me, not getting in the way. And the practice of shamanism is a practice of doing. I'm very active. I am in the way. And I have to be in the way very consciously, and I have to be very aware of the needs of the people that I'm working with, and my own needs, and what are the spirits directing, and where do I go with this, and what do I do, and every one of those shamanic journeys is kind of an adventure into this world, and I don't know what the result's going to be, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just have to, after 20 years, 25 years now, I've developed this trust, and I know that I can accept and follow their guidance, and it's going to work out okay. So that feels good. But, and it is also very sweet for me when I step into doing a Reiki treatment, and I just know the form, and I have the tradition, and I have you and the other lineage bearers behind me, and it just becomes something that I can go totally unconscious with almost, and just get out of the way and let the energy flow, mm-hmm. and not have any mm-hmm. agenda. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. in the shamanic tradition, I have an agenda, I have a purpose, I have an intent. And that's what carries me through that practice. Not having any agenda, not having any intent is what carries me through the great
practice.
Right. And
right.
I love the balance. I love having both of those in my life.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it seems to have fit you really well.
It has.
So, you heard my little talk about gratitude, mm-hmm. and I'm mm-hmm. wondering, is that congruent with what you understand of...
So much, yeah.
Native practice?
Well,
native, or
just living, being a human being, being on this universe. I talk a bit with my students about cultivating an attitude of gratitude, being thankful. I wake up in the morning, and it's like, thank you for letting me wake up today. Thank you for the gifts that are going to be happening today, because I know there's going to be gifts. At least, I'll be able to breathe. That's a gift.
Right.
I'll be able to move around, and that's a gift. I know I'll learn something. That's a gift. And I'm going to be able to feel the support of the spirit guides and the teachers that I have in the spirit world. And that's a gift, and connect with the people that love and care about me in the physical world, mm-hmm. and that's a gift, and it's just like acknowledging that. So to me, it this gratitude is just remembering who I am, where I am, and what I'm here for. My belief is that the purpose I came into this life, and the purpose that each one of us comes into this lifetime, is to find our joy.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember who told me this. I wish I did. But somebody told me that you can't experience gratitude without feeling joy. And you can't experience joy without feeling gratitude. And it tied the two of them together. And I started looking at that. And yes, every time I allowed myself to find joy in my life, I was grateful. And every time that I found gratitude, I felt joyful. And the two of them were so interlinked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been there for the last several years. And part of the practice is just recognizing that, acknowledging that, and for me, it really affects how I'm able to live the precepts of Reiki.
Yes, I was just thinking about the precepts and show gratitude.
Show gratitude to every living thing, and to me, everything is living. In the shamanic tradition, everything is alive, and so I reach over to turn off my alarm clock and I say thank you. For waking me up, and thank you to the spirit of the alarm clock for being alive and remembering what time it is and that I wanted to get up now. I have this, when I'm home, I have this wonderful relationship with this black lab who's, Hannah's 13 years old now, and she's having a little trouble hearing and seeing, but, she is so much alive. She's not a, like we get taught in our Western culture, she's just an animal. She isn't. She's a sentient being to me. And then I get a chance to treat all of the animals that way, and the spirits. And I work with the spirits of the animals in the spirit world, and I work with the physical form in the physical world. And it's, I'm losing, or I want to lose, the distinction between the differences between being in physical form and being in spirit form. That if we're in spirit form, we have this relationship to the physical form. If we're in physical form, we have a relationship to the spirit form of who we are.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think we tend to separate them. One of the New Agey phrases I learned was, I'm a spiritual being in a physical body. Well, that separates the two. It feels like I'm acknowledging the spiritual part of myself, and I'm acknowledging the physical part of myself, but I'm keeping them separate. If I'm really living in gratitude, and if I'm finding my joy, I can't separate those two.
Uh-huh.
It's, they come together. They're part of the whole.
So, we had to stop again for the fan. So, hopefully we'll continue on without... maybe the wind wants to come in.
Uh-huh. Well, with the way that heater and air conditioner is constructed, the wind kind of blows through it.
Uh-huh.
So we have a presence of the wind. When it was 18 degrees last week, the heater was just letting the wind blow through.
Right. Well, it probably heated at 30 or 40 degrees, but that wasn't enough.
It wasn't anywhere near enough. Yeah.
Great.
So we have a wind present.
Yes, we do. So I'm intrigued about this connection between gratitude and joy. I've just been kind of rolling back in my mind the moments where I feel like I've had gratitude. And I guess what I need to do is explore this, explore joy, because for me, it seemed like in the past, anyway, that joy was a kind of happiness. But maybe there's a deeper sense of what this means. Mm-hmm. So can you kind of talk more about joy?
It has to do for me with recognizing the whole, I guess. Again, in the shamanic practice, there aren't separations. There aren't distinctions between who I am and who other things are. We're all connected. And one of my most intense encounters with this process was when Marty got cancer and got sick, and during a period of 6 months went through the end of her life. And I didn't feel very joyful during some of that. But the night that she transitioned, there were some experiences, and laying alongside of her as she took her last breaths, there was a profound sense of joy.
Uh-huh.
Of having known her. Of knowing that... the pain and the suffering that she had gone through, the cancer was over. Of knowing that my connection with her didn't end.
Uh-huh.
And that experience reframed joy for me. So now it's at a point where when things happen and I'm not feeling the joy of them happening, and I look for it. Okay, where is the joy in this? What's happening right now that I can appreciate? What's happening that I can be grateful for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it's the end of something bad happening, or even if it's something bad happening to somebody I love and care about very much, you know, it's like, I appreciate that they're there and able to move through this, and I totally trust that somewhere in that process, there is something good that's going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And then I can feel the joy. I can feel the appreciation. I don't understand why they have to learn the lesson that way. And I can be confused about that. But, and I don't get into, you know, this blame stuff that sometimes happens about, well, they called it on themselves, so, you know, I'm finally glad that they got the lesson and, you know, got what they deserved. It's not that at all. It's recognizing that, you know, things are going to happen, and sometimes they're not going to be pleasant, and sometimes we don't even deserve them,
But it's that, what can we learn from the situation? What mm-hmm. can, where's the message, where's the lesson, where's the joy in that course? Mm-hmm. And,
yes, well, that's my experience also. Yeah. Especially from the last 2 years, but even more so when I was traveling a lot and seeing people go through really difficult processes and very painful and sort of shattering belief systems and so on, that there was a gratitude that Reiki brought to the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me has been really wonderful, that the practice of Reiki can bring to all situations an understanding of this quality of joy, and also to bring to it a feeling of gratitude, mm-hmm. like, I'm glad this happened, even though it was really painful and was mm-hmm. really uncomfortable and I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. There was a gift. And that certainly has been true in my life. And I feel that the precepts are based actually on gratitude in a very subtle way. It's not just show gratitude, although that has been a really interesting phrase for me, because it used to be kind of just a couple of words, thank you, I don't know where that came from inside of me, but I think sometimes it actually came from a place of gratitude, and sometimes it just came from a place of being socially acceptable. But as I've processed through my practice of Reiki, the deepening of the place of gratitude has allowed me to fill those words with, I hope, some substance, so that they become not just an automatic reflex or an automatic response to something, but actually a way to initiate gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh. And sometimes it just, one of the connections for me, especially with Reiki, is I can always start with being grateful that I can put my hands on myself or put my hands on someone else.
Mm-hmm.
That's always there. And so if I can't find anything else to attach the gratitude to,
right,
it's like, that feels good. My hands feel so good on my body, and I can feel the energy coming in. And I know what it's going to do. It's going to help me relax. It's going to help me not get angry. It's going to help me not be afraid. It's going to help me honor my parents, teachers, and elders. It's going to help me on how I approach earning my living, and it's
been, uh-huh.
you know, it's part of all of the precepts, and it's my cornerstone for gratitude. And then I can move beyond that. It's like, I'm really grateful I have these hands, and I can have this connection with the energy, and now what's happening in the situation.
Yeah. There was a kind of fad for a while of, and maybe it's still a good group process, and that is to every day list 10 things that you're grateful for.
Mm.
And I found, I've done that over a month's time or so, and I found that to be really interesting, because at first it felt very contrived, and sometimes I really had to contrive to feel gratitude for for 10 things, because I had a really terrible day. But it was a good practice to get me into seeing the other side uh-huh. of the events in my life, even if they're very, very small.
Yeah.
So, are seemingly unimportant. And, you know, I think for all of us, it's a really wonderful opportunity to be conscious of the places of gratitude in our life, that we can, so that we have this consistent path of gratitude, mm-hmm. rather than just in the big times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, the most crises, the biggest crises, or the biggest happenings, that we do this daily, very small time mm-hmm. Gratitudes, because they actually fill the gap.
Yeah. I'd have a hard time now limiting it to 10.
Yeah?
That would drive me nuts to limit it to 10. Yeah. I wake up in the morning and I kind of go through my gratitude of being here and having this day ahead of me, and I go to bed at night and I go through my process of connecting with the Creator and the spirits and the gratitude for having them just be around me during the day,
right.
and the things that have happened and the people that I've been able to meet, and the everything from the freezing cold weather that makes me aware of my physical body in a new way, and to sitting in the hot tub and watching the stars overhead, and it's all part of that.
Right. Wonderful.
So, yeah, but it's a good place to start.
I mean, right.
I go back, 10, 15 years ago, and it's and struggling with finding the gratitude and that sense of peace that it brings. And at that point in time, I probably would have been hard pressed to come up with that.
Right. So, you listeners, we're going to give you a little gratitude assignment. Try it out for a while and see if you can make a list of 10. And if you get over 10, that's great. And if you struggle with 10, then this is a good thing to do for a while,
yeah.
I think. So I have another thought that's coming up for me, and that is that, let's see, one of the things that I've been really taken with in my research about Japan, and also about the Japanese culture, is this very basic Shinto belief that everything has divinity, everything's divine. And mm-hmm. I really feel like that it's a kind of universal truth, in that everything that I've read about most religions, everything is divine. And we don't often live that, or the issue is, how do we live that? So when I think about the native teachers that I've sat with, one of the things that they also really encouraged was non-victimization. So we're not victims of the natural world. We're, everything is divine, mm-hmm. and everything works together. And so mm-hmm. If there is a hailstorm that comes and damages all the crops, for sure there is a survival issue that comes up for those people whose crops have been destroyed. And I think that those are the test times in any spiritual practice, where then we get to see where the gratitude is in that mm-hmm. situation. Mm-hmm. And it's also the same in Reiki. So I've really learned, what I really loved about the prayers of the native people that I've experienced has been not, oh, please, oh, thank you. Oh, if you could only, if you would please do this for me, I'll do something for you, kind of prayers, mm-hmm. Which I grew up with. And that was my own thing. I'm not going to, put that on anybody else. That was where I was at the time. But to say, hey, I'm here and you're there and you're supposed to help me and you're supposed to support me. And, here I am doing my best. And what are you doing? Come down here and help me, because I'm we're partners in this, mm-hmm. and I love mm-hmm. the partnership feeling of native prayers. And
yeah.
I just wonder if I'm goofy or if I've just taken my rebellious state to another whole level.
Well, maybe. I'm going to leave that one alone.
Okay.
But, yeah, I've heard those prayers, and there's a part of me that really likes them, that likes the clarity of that and the honesty of it.
Yeah.
And there's another step that sometimes when I'm feeling that way comes in for me, and that is, all right, Creator, I know that you're there. I know you love me. I know you care about me. And I don't understand how you're doing it. I don't understand the message. I don't understand the circumstances. I don't understand why the hailstorm has come and destroyed my crop. It's, I don't understand why Marty was taken away. I don't, you know, these things I don't understand. Help me understand. And so it's a little bit different than, you know, okay, get down here and do something about it.
Yes. So have you gotten answers to those questions?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely. So I hate to do this, but so why Marty?
Because there was a place in our relationship that was very comfortable for both of us. We had been together for 25 years. Our children had grown. We both had Reiki. Things were just very comfortable. And it was very easy for us to not go beyond that. I think her way of going beyond it was to go out into the spirit world for a little bit and then come back in another form. I think my way of going on beyond that was to stay here and to continue my work and meet with other people and be with them. And, the same thing was true when Alan left. That marriage and that relationship ended again in cancer, and she left, and it was like, okay, this is interesting. She graduated and I didn't. which course am I not passing here?
There is
a little bit of that. but there was also this appreciation for, okay, well, I get to keep going here and see where this will take me. My father died at 58 from a stroke almost instantly. And I never imagined myself older than him.
You know, that's a very common thing.
Yeah.
Very common thing.
My 70th birthday is next month.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm grateful. I'm going, wow, how did this happen? And the things that I've seen in those last 22 years have been amazing and wonderful. And the experiences that I've had an opportunity to have. I am just so grateful that if one of us had to leave, it was Marty, and I really wish her the best, and I still have a connection with her spirit.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not, you know, it's not a sense of her not progressing, but her progressing in her own way and me progressing in my own.
Well, so, you know, what happens for me when you say this, which I appreciate, is just then, well, let's talk about what death means. I mm-hmm. mean, I think that, you know, there's a common thing that we all go through where death is the failure to save someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know really where this ever came from. I'm not quite sure. I've studied this a little bit, but I have it so deeply ingrained in me that you know, it just is the first reaction that comes up, and then I have to go, whoa.
Well, you're the daughter of a physician, so I mean that that makes total sense to me.
Yeah, that's
our
too.
Whole medical system is built on that.
Yeah,
and
you
our
know,
spiritual,
like,
the Christian tradition is built on that. You hang on to life as long as you can
because it's precious, no matter what. And
that's right.
And it's like, well, I don't know, all these stories about people living in comas or living, you know, and
yeah.
I don't know if that's really the right thing. Like,
yeah.
I just think about all the stories that I've heard over the last weeks about parents who maybe even 25 or 30 years ago might have already died.
Mm-hmm.
But because of drugs and intervention in a very subtle way, they're being kept on the in this lifetime way beyond what they know to be true. Mm-hmm. And I think that as human beings, if we are kept beyond what we know to be true, then there's a lot of resentment and there's a lot of, okay, if I'm going to be here, then it's going to be my way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's, I just, this is one of my puzzles these days, trying to unravel this. Mm-hmm. And hoping that it doesn't happen to me.
Yeah.
I have to say.
I don't think it needs to. I think, there are ways in which we can make sure that that doesn't happen. We have advanced directives and legal power, of a durable power of attorney that can put that decision and our wishes in somebody's hands so that that can be carried out. And I think that's absolutely a wonderful way to deal with this. But I think it's, again, we come back to that attitude of gratitude. You know, if you live your life in gratitude, that carries into that process with you. Uh-huh. And it's, and there isn't that. There's a wonderful book by, the title of the book is How Can I Help? And I forget the name of the author. He's one of the big teachers. And they talk in there about oftentimes in the hospital room, they'll see a shift of personality in the person who's dying.
Right.
And sometimes it's a very positive shift, and they kind of relax, and they're really sweet, and you can feel the energy around them, and it's this wonderful transition experience. And there are other times when all the anger that's been bottled up for all their lifetime comes up, and they rage, and they let it all out, because they need to let it out before they move on. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a choice about how we do that. You know, and if we're living in gratitude, and we're not harboring resentments, and we're acknowledging others, and we're kind of taking on that responsibility for how we feel and what we do with it, then I think we don't have to hit that all of a sudden at the end of our life, mm-hmm. and figure out what to do with it to be able to move on to the next step. Mm-hmm.
Well, this brings up another really interesting question for me, and that is, how do I know that if I keep being grateful for everything that happens to me, even all the really not-so-great things, that I'm not stuffing it, you know, that I'm not avoiding it? So where is the fine line between gratitude and avoidance?
Well, I don't think that you can feel true gratitude. I don't think you can really feel grateful, and that's the part where joy comes into it. I don't think if I'm harboring something and I'm saying I'm grateful that I'll feel the joy.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Which leads me to believe that, oh, maybe that isn't gratitude that I'm really expressing. Maybe it's just trying to get them the heck out of here so that I can go do what I want to do. Or maybe it's just my way of saying, okay, I'm not going to deal with that situation.
Uh-huh.
Because if I can't feel the joy, if I don't experience that joy, then it's not true gratitude.
Mm-hmm. So,
and that's kind of the test for me.
Uh-huh. So I guess this calls upon each of us to have a very high level of self-knowledge or self-awareness.
Mm-hmm. Appreciation, understanding. It's like in the shamanic tradition, one of the questions that comes up in the classes is, how do I know this is true and I'm not just making it up? And I love Michael Horner's response to it. It's like, does it make a difference? You know, well, in this case, I think it does. I think in this case, I go to another teacher of mine who says, can you feel it in your gut? Does it feel true to you in your gut? Is it just something that's in the head, or is it something that you can feel it in your body? And if you can feel it in your body, then it's true. So if I can feel the joy in my body, and I don't feel this tightness or this place where I'm sticking stuff away, then I trust it. If it's just, you know, saying thank you or, yeah, I really appreciate what you just did for me, then I know it's, you know, it's words coming from the head, because I don't feel it in my, I don't feel the joy in my body.
So we have, in some way, an automatic kind of
barometer
of truth and not truth. Yeah. That we know that, whether we know it or not, we know it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so then it's just a matter of paying attention to it. Now, I mean, there was a period of time when I didn't know it.
Uh-huh.
And then there was a period of time when I knew the theory and was trying to understand it. And then there was a period of time when I got it.
Uh-huh.
And was really aware of it. When I feel that joy and that gratitude and that sense of wonder and peace and excitement and appreciation, and then I know it's there. And if I can't feel that, then there's something in the way that I need to look at.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I'm doing with that I'm not opening myself up. I'm not surrendering.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not allowing myself to go
mm-hmm.
into that. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, again, is the blessing of having Reiki come into my life and then the shamanic practice come into my life, is they so support each other for me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine. I can do a Reiki treatment without shamanism, but I can't do shamanism without Reiki.
Really?
Yeah. It's a part of that practice. It's a part of who I am. It's that energy that comes in, and it's part of my connection with the people that I work with. It's part of my connection with the spirits that I work with. It's what makes it safe in some way for me to move into the spirit world mm-hmm. and do these other things.
Mm-hmm. So when you found your own shamanic culture that you were talking about mm-hmm. in the beginning, part of that culture was Reiki.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And part of that culture was Welsh.
Part of it was Welsh.
And what part has that come through? I'm just wondering.
Well, in the one of the principal belief systems or practices in Celtic shamanism was this honoring the place between.
Honoring the place between.
So if you want to know the nature of a river, for instance, mm-hmm. then you have to understand the rocks that are the bed of the river, and you have to understand the water that flows through the river, and where is the best place to feel, to understand them both. It's that space between the rocks and the water. And so in the journey, you go into that space between to understand both sides.
Is there some way that you can extrapolate another thing? Because there's just some little niggling thing Reiki and...
Sure. For the same thing happens with gratitude. If I look at that place between me not being able to feel gratitude mm-hmm. and being grateful, and if I can take Reiki into that place and I can understand it, I can bring that energy into uh-huh. that space between, it helps me understand what's happening, what the dynamic is in both of those parts. So then I understand, these are the reasons why I wouldn't feel grateful for this. And these are the wonderful things in it that I can feel grateful for.
Uh-huh.
And then I can let go of the stuff I don't.
Right.
If I don't understand it, then I stick it away, waiting for myself to come to the point where I can understand
right.
it. And that burdens me and it wears me down and it makes it harder to feel that mm-hmm. joy in my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm kind of lost in the space between.
That happens too.
Yeah.
And there was this in the Celtic shamanism, the path of the shaman is the going through all these tests, and you go through the quaking bog where you're trying to find your way across this bog. The footholds are very few and far between. It reminds me of the scene of Bodo and going across that bog in Lord of the Rings, where he's trying to get back to the to return the gift to the mountain, and one false step and you're down in the bog. And,
right.
And then there's the fiery forest is the next typical one in the Celtic shamanic tradition, where you have to get through this forest that's on fire. And how can you make it from one side to the other? And so this recognition that there are going to be a lot of tests in life. And your focus is on getting from A to B. And sometimes A to B is 2 inches, and sometimes A to B is 200 miles.
Uh-huh.
And it's just getting from A to B. And there's all sorts of stuff happening around you. There's all sorts of things happening to you. But your journey is to get from A to B. And if you can accept that, and if you can be grateful that you're given the skill and the ability to make that journey, mm-hmm. and you have the support and the love of the universe to make that journey, then you can be grateful and go for it. Mm-hmm. And Reiki to me is one of those gifts. It's when I'm in the burning forest or the quaking bog, you know, my hands are on my chest and I'm just going, okay, we can make this, we can do this. Mm-hmm. And I feel that support. And then the shamanic practice is giving me another way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Some belief systems to work with.
Hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah, it has been. Thank you. And thank you for your part in it. And you were one of my quaking bogs and burning forests, as you will well remember the years between me declaring I wanted to be a master and my time of initiation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it was an honor.
Yeah. Great.
Well, thank you very much, Phil. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Yeah, it has been sweet.
Taking us to places I didn't know it would. And I really love hearing this connection with you, with shamanism and Reiki, and how that's come together in this quality or this, I don't know, maybe it's even an aspiration to be grateful, you know, to live a life of gratitude is a great aspiration for us. Mm-hmm. And it calls out in us, I think, you know, a need for letting go of sentimental and shallow love, mm-hmm. and understanding mm-hmm. that love transcends everything. And that actually, I have this feeling that we don't actually know what love really is.
Well, yeah, and gratitude, that sense of gratitude has given me a much deeper appreciation for love. A much deeper appreciation for compassion, and an understanding about relationship in both an individual, personal way and in a more corporate, universal way.
Right. Well, obviously our parents and our blood family present our tests and our bogs and our fiery forest and all that.
Yeah, the last test is the what is it? The frozen sea.
Oh, great. So, well, sometimes we start with the frozen sea.
And I think last week was
the frozen sea.
Kind of the frozen uh-huh. sea.
Oh, well, it puts everything into a context, and that's great.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Thank you very much,
You're
Phil.
You're welcome.
And thank you, listeners. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.